Appeals Division 1 is now in session. The Honorable Ron Frost presiding.
Good morning. Please be seated. State versus Frazier is the first matter. Parties ready?
May it please the court, Jennifer Winkler on behalf of Malcolm Frazier. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well.
7 seems good. Because I didn't discuss it much in the reply brief, I'd like to start out with the misconduct finding. And the state has argued that it is a comment on the evidence. We disagree. Article 4, Section 16 of the state constitution states, judges shall not charge juries with respect to matters of fact nor comment thereon, but shall declare the law. Now, offsetting that, we have an issue of bias. Bias describes the relationship between a party and a witness or an investigator, in this case, that might lead the witness to slant, unconsciously or otherwise, his testimony in favor of or against a party. And we're arguing in this case that the Sixth Amendment confrontation right of Mr. Frazier was violated when the court precluded, in this case, a meaningful cross-examination. And we believe that the finding of misconduct was not a comment on the evidence. It was the evidence. It was the evidence, and it precluded a full and effective cross-examination. That's straight out of Davis versus Alaska. You get to go fully into the nature of the bias, not just to touch on it. To fully expose, in that case, we're all familiar with most likely, that there was that prior juvenile conviction that could have led the witness to make something up about the accused in that case. And although the defense counsel was allowed to touch on the possibility that he was fabricating something, he didn't fully have the ability to cross-examine that witness. We believe that Judge Andrus's finding, who is not the trial judge, is similar to Davis versus Alaska, and that it precluded a full and effective cross-examination. So the defense was precluded from introducing that finding that he committed misconduct by deleting or failing to disclose emails from people who were related to the church but had become disgruntled with the church, failing to disclose the detective's own emails between himself and Mr. Frazier's mother, and then resisting defense discovery requests. Now, I think this would be perhaps an easier question for the court if this had been a finding in a previous case. It makes it a little trickier in this case, but I don't think there'd be any question that it would be admissible if it had been a finding of misconduct in a previous case. Now, the question is this a comment on the evidence? And as I stated earlier, no, it is the evidence. This is not a situation like the Lane case, where in Lane there was a dispute as to the prison informant, the reason for his early release, whether it had been as a result of special favoritism by the prosecutor or if it was a safety issue. And in Lane, the trial judge actually instructed the jury that, oh, no, it was a safety issue, which decided the issue. Here, this is a finding of misconduct, and it fully goes to the ability to expose bias. Bias is one of the most important things for a defense, because that's what the tools that the defense has to undermine the state's case. And if it comes down to, and I don't think it does, as I've explained, but an issue of a contest between a federal constitutional right, the Sixth Amendment, and our state constitution, I think this court can also find that the supremacy clause of our own state constitution and just the law of the land in general, the federal constitution is going to trump in all of those situations. So, I guess second, if there's no questions on that, I'd like to discuss the counseling records. Now, we're arguing that the case should be remanded for the judge to review the records, as was requested, that it was an abuse of discretion for the court to refuse to or to decline to review the records. There was a non-speculative basis offered and a plausible showing that the information would be material and favorable to the defense, because there was a showing that the records likely contained evidence of the complainant MC's bias towards the church. It made it into the CPS report that was relayed from the counselor that she considered the church to be like a cult. Now, at trial, she denied ill feelings towards the church and really diminished her ill feelings, but it was likely and plausible that those records would contain more information on that. And also, given the nature of Again, Detective McCall's interview of the complainant, the records were reasonably likely to reflect a more accurate account. Now, that was asserted in the motion for disclosure of the records and for in-camera review of the records. But it was even more fleshed out at trial. It was the familiar face, Dr. John Yulee, I believe is how it's pronounced, and he went through many of the problems with that interview. So those were two reasons that this was non-speculative. This was not like Kalikowski, which was a case where the defense sought to review a rape crisis counselor's records because the notes might contain details which may exculpate the accused or otherwise be helpful to the defense. That's just too speculative. We agree that's too speculative. That's not what happened here. Dimol is a little more, or Dimol, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, is a little more concrete, I guess, in terms of what they're searching for in that case. But again, it's purely speculative. It's creative, but there's no reason to believe that these things that they're looking for would necessarily be in those records. This case is not like that. In-camera review would have ensured that Mr. Frazier had access to the evidence necessary to his defense, but it would have completely protected the complainant's privacy as well. And that's why cases tend to err on the side of disclosure. Ritchie errs on the side of disclosure. Well, maybe that's, I'm not using the right terminology there, but Ritchie and Gentry are the cases we're relying on to argue that disclosure would be appropriate here. The other two issues we've raised are the denial of the right to cross-examination, the complainant's sister, KC is her initials. And we're arguing that the court's decision was an abuse of discretion because she was under 18 was not a reason to deny cross-examination on that matter. Evidence of bias, as I've discussed, is always relevant. There was no other witness who provided as much information about her disclosure before the motive to fabricate arose. That arose from the controversy regarding the former member of the church, Athena Dean, who had the blog, and that was the defense in this case. So we have the motive to fabricate arising, but we have this witness who is giving these detailed disclosure details. So evidence of bias is always relevant, and we believe that she should have been able to, the defense should have been able to effectively cross-examine her regarding why she regarding her failures to show up for interviews. Under 18, that really makes no difference because she was a competent witness. There's no rule that someone who's under 18 can't testify, and there shouldn't be a rule that someone who's under 18 can't be cross-examined for bias. So with that, we'd ask this court to reverse.
Thank you. You have your rebuttal time.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is David Seaver. I'm here on behalf of the state of Washington. I don't have a great deal to add to what we presented in our brief. I'd just like to address very quickly the assertion that opposing counsel just made regarding the trial court's refusal to allow cross-examination about the pretrial judge's finding on the detective's actions. As we stated in our brief, the defense attorney at trial amply explored this subject with the detective regarding his actions in the investigation, and that was a large part of the defense theory, was that it was improperly investigated.
Did the detective assert that his behavior was appropriate?
He was never asked a question like, how do you feel about actions?
Was the result of the ruling, let me rephrase that, did the ruling result in the defense being precluded from asking a question such as, do you have any reason to believe that your behavior in deleting the emails was improper?
I don't think that was a question that was posed to the lawyers.
I know it wasn't posed. My question is, was it barred by the ruling?
I think the...
Because obviously if he denied it, right. Do you agree, if he had denied it, he would have had a reason to believe, and that would have made it relevant.
Sure, that would have opened the door to this kind of information.
So was a question of that type barred by the pretrial ruling?
The pretrial ruling only said that he could not be cross-examined on the pretrial court's finding that the deletion of these emails was improper. The pretrial judge never made a ruling that the officer did this for some subversive or ill-intentioned reasons. The trial court never found that it was done by the detective as an act of bias or anything of that nature. It was simply the officer said, I didn't think these were relevant to the investigation. The court said, without ruling on your subjective intent, I, as a pretrial judge, am finding that you should not have deleted these emails, and I'm directing you and the state to attempt to retrieve them from the police department's computer servers. And all of and much of what the officer did was questioned, was the subject of cross-examination by defense counsel. The only thing that was precluded.
And when it was subject to cross-examination, did he assert that he had behaved appropriately?
I don't think he was ever asked a question like that, and he certainly never spontaneously came to his own defense. He'd simply answer the questions that were asked to him. And in that regard, it's difficult to say what was somehow withheld, or it's difficult to find what was improper about the trial court's ruling here, given that the pretrial judge's ruling was kind of irrelevant to any exploration of this witness's bias. His actions were certainly subject to cross-examination to attempt to expose bias, but the pretrial judge's opinion on the detective's actions is kind of irrelevant to the questions before the court and it's before the jury, and it's a matter of, you know, the jury is the one that has to decide how it's going to assess the credibility of a witness, and to insert a judge's opinion as to the detective's behavior here is quintessentially a judicial comment on the evidence, and to suggest that somehow it prevents defense from effectively cross-examining all pretrial motions in limine that limit what a an attorney can cross-examine about or ask a question about necessarily affect the scope of cross-examination. They don't always constitute represent a constitutional infringement, and this was just a clear case where everything but the trial court's opinion was permitted. With regard to the counseling records, as we stated in our brief, again, there wasn't a sufficient showing of materiality or that this was going to be anything more than a fishing expedition, and the trial court reasonably ruled. And the one thing I do want to comment on before I yield the remainder of my time is simply that the trial court did not exclude cross-examination of the victim's sister because she was underage, so much as it was the fact that she was underage and dependent on her father transporting her to a pretrial interview. And since those were the only facts to explain why the victim's sister did not appear for a pretrial interview, the trial court said, look, she's a minor, and it was clearly in the context of she was dependent on someone else for transportation. Given that, it's hard to say that that was a sign of her own bias, since it wasn't a voluntary decision on her part to absent herself from pretrial interviews, and she ultimately sat for one. It was just telephonic. If the court has no further questions, I'll yield the remainder of my time.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor. I will be talking about the misconduct finding. So the questions that do get asked occur in the April 24th hearing. It's on page 37 of my brief. So I don't have the exact questions with me, but I do have what how he responded, and I know that doesn't quite touch on Your Honor's question. But so Detective McCall claimed that the emails that he used to harshly criticize the theology were rapport building only with Mr. Frazier's mother, and then he denied that his religious views affected his judgment in conducting the investigation. He explained he purposely did not share emails with the defense because, based on his opinion, that they lacked evidentiary value. And our argument is that doesn't get to the finding that this was misconduct. The court actually did find, Judge Andrus found, who was not the trial judge, and I think that is significant to a degree, that his personal religious opposition to what he perceives as the theology of Sound Doctrine Church may have affected his judgment in the investigation of Mr. Frazier. The ability to challenge the investigation is absolutely paramount in a defense of this nature, because this is a he said, she said credibility situation. And so challenging the investigation is crucial because
did the motion in limine preclude asking a question of the type that I asked opposing counsel?
Can you remind me of what the precise
question
was?
The question was like at trial, not the pretrial hearing,
right,
but at trial, was the detective ever asked a question akin to, Do you have any reason to believe whether your deletion of the emails was appropriate?
I believe the questions I've just read touched on that.
I thought that was the pretrial hearing.
No, these are from trial. What I just read to you was from trial.
Oh, you referred to it as a hearing, so I thought.
I'm sorry, I misspoke, Your Honor. And those were questions. Those are examples.
So he said that he thought it was appropriate.
Yeah, he said.
So then, what step did defense counsel take then to claim that the door had been opened and that the ruling should be revisited?
I don't recall in the record. I can alert you, Your Honor, to that. But there was some objection surrounding the attempt to rebut the assertion of bias by the state, where they were allowed to pull in the testimony of the Enumclaw businesswoman to say, oh, yeah, he told me, Mr.
Well, I'm not trying to confuse the two issues. Whether or not he had a religious bias is a different question, I think, from whether or not his investigation conformed to the requirements of law. And so what I'm getting at is the finding of a Brady violation. If he's claiming that that he behaved appropriately in all regards, then my question is, was the court asked to revisit its pretrial ruling based on the assertion that was made at trial?
I don't know, but I believe it was. But I don't believe the defense would have been required to do that to preserve the issue, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The next matter is State versus